Chapter 10, The Edges of Space. Every flight is different, and every flight is special. Pilots comprise less than 0.002% of the population of the United States, so it's fair to say that few people get to see the particular view and perspective that pilots do from our regular seats, only a few hundred or thousand feet up in the air. But I've also been especially privileged because of my particular line of work. I may not have made a lot of money over the past 20 years, but I've gotten more than my share of extra special flights, some of which I've talked about in the preceding chapters of this book. Yet even among all those extra special flights, there is one that stands out as the most high, the most special, the most once-in-a-lifetime, the one I cannot imagine ever topping. And that was my flight in a U-2 spy plane. Spacesuit required. Most pilots would covet the chance to fly a U-2, in part because so few ever do. More people can legitimately wear a Super Bowl championship ring than a solo patch for the U-2, even though the plane has been flying since 1955. But the flight had a particularly special meaning for me because, you see, I never dreamed of being a pilot when I was a kid. I stumbled into aviation when I was 24 years old. But I did once dream of being an astronaut. I was 3 years old when I started dreaming of seeing the Earth from space. It was the height of the Mercury-Apollo era, which I'm sure had a lot to do with it. As did the fact that my older sister Gail had decided she wanted to be an astronaut, and I pretty much wanted to do whatever she wanted to do. But still, girls weren't actually allowed to be astronauts back then, but that didn't stop us. Obstacles, even seemingly insurmountable ones, never stopped anyone from dreaming, especially at the age of 3. My father, enlightened soul that he is, even bought my sister and me astronaut outfits for Christmas that year as encouragement. Well, okay, the flight suit part was actually matching fuzzy sleeper pajamas. But we got white plastic astronaut helmets complete with American flag insignias, movable plexiglass visors, and even microphones lined with some kind of tissue-like paper to make our voices sound microphone funny when we talked through them. Of all the photos my parents took of us as kids, the one that's my absolute favorite, so much so that I stole it out of the family album one year, had copies made, and now have it sitting on my desk, is the photo of Gail and me that Christmas morning trying out our new spacesuits in the front hallway. Even now, more than a generation later, I can almost hear the gleeful laughter pealing out of the photo from my giggling, happy face. I remember feeling that way. It's the same look I must have had on my face when, about the same age, I used to stand on hilltops on breezy days, head thrown back and arms stretched out, trying to drink the wind. 3-year-olds may not know a lot about finance, science, or history, but they know joy better than any adult I know. Joy, laughter, and how to be completely and deliriously immersed in a moment. They also know how to dream. But time passed and life moved on. I got more interested in drama, arts, and writing, and the dream of space travel faded. Yet I never forgot that plastic space helmet or the dream that had gone with it. And while my path went in a very different direction, the dream never really died. So, okay, I wasn't ever going to be an astronaut. But just once, I thought, just once, wouldn't it be cool to go far enough off the planet to have to wear a spacesuit? And far enough, maybe not all the way to space, but far enough to see the curvature of the Earth. That would be enough. More than enough. It was still a pie-in-the-sky kind of dream, of course. But when I met a U-2 pilot named John Cabagas at a Cub fly-in a few years ago, turns out a lot of U-2 pilots fly little tailwheel airplanes in their spare time, and he suggested that I might be able to get a ride in a U-2 for an article, it all came rushing back.